Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Another week here at Africa Link. Hello and thanks for joining us. From Bonn, Germany, I'm Crispin Mwakideu.
And I'm Wanjiku Mwaura.
And coming up, Nigerians protest against economic wars as President Buhari extends his health stay in the UK.
Today we shall protest. Tomorrow we shall protest. Next tomorrow we shall protest. Next week we shall protest. Next year we shall protest. In 10 years time we shall keep protesting.
We have lots of feedback from our social media desk on that story, so stay tuned to that.
Burundi marks unity anniversary between Hutus and Tutsis, but how strong is this unity?
The leaders have a lot to do and to consolidate peace and security and unity.
In villages, there's no problem between Hutus and Tutsis. People live together, they share everything, but the only problem resides among political actors.
Plus, U.S. President Donald Trump continues his attack on a judge who stopped his travel ban. All that and more coming up right after the news.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Hundreds of Nigerians have protested against corruption and poverty on Monday after President Muhammadu Buhari requested to extend his medical stay in London. Buhari's prolonged absence has raised political and economic tensions in the West African country. As critics say, Buhari has failed to uphold campaign promises to fight endemic corruption and alleviate a worsening economy, now at its weakest in 25 years. A presidential spokesman has said Buhari is not in any serious medical condition, but has not yet said when Buhari would return to Nigeria. In the U.S., officials have requested a federal court to continue blocking President Donald Trump's executive travel ban, which bars travelers from seven mostly Muslim countries from entering the country. Lawyers for two U.S. states said reinstating the ban would unleash chaos, as nationwide protests have led to deep divisions in the country. Meanwhile, in an interview late on Sunday, Trump spoke on bettering U.S.-Russian relations.
I say it's better to get along with Russia than not. And if Russia helps us in the fight against ISIS, which is a major fight, and Islamic terrorism all over the world,
right,
major fight, that's a good thing.
At a meeting in Munich, German Chancellor Angela Merkel was officially selected to run as her party's candidate in September federal elections. The center-right Christian Democratic Union and its Bavarian sister party, the Christian Social Union, unanimously selected Merkel to seek her fourth term as German chancellor. Her main rival will be Social Democrat and former European Parliament President Martin Schulz, who has vowed to fight populists and anti-democrats. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Hundreds of thousands of people have taken to the streets across Romania on Monday, calling on the socialist government to step down. Protesters have accused the newly elected government of wrongdoing, even after it repealed a controversial corruption decree that would have benefited dozens of Romanian political figures. Demonstrations over the weekend and on Monday are the largest countrywide protests since the fall of dictator Nicolae Ceausescu in 1989. Spanish authorities have said it rescued more than 500 migrants off the Libyan coast on Monday. This comes after Italy had rescued over 1,500 migrants over the weekend. Speaking to reporters, EU foreign policy chief Federica Mogherini has vowed to help those migrants fleeing Libya and North Africa.
We've also seen that 4,500 people died in Libyan waters, and we have to do something about that. The Libyans have to do something about that. Europeans have to do something about that. We believe the international community entirely has to do something with that, and you cannot just close your eyes because people are continuing to die.
And now in sports, Cameroon shocked Egypt late on Sunday, beating the Pharaohs 2-1 to win the African Cup of Nations in host country Gabon. Also in the U.S., Tom Brady and the New England Patriots manufactured the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history, beating the Atlanta Falcons 34-28 in overtime to win Super Bowl 51. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You're You are listening to Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideo.
And Wanjiko Mwaura.
One Voice Nigerian protest. Hundreds of people have turned out on the streets of Lagos, Nigeria's commercial capital, to protest the economic hardship in the country. The protest went ahead in spite of police warnings that there might be violence because a pro-government group was also planning its own rally. The anti-government protest comes at a time President Muhammadu Buhari is abroad for what many Nigerians suspect has to do with his failing health. Samuel Okoya reports from Lagos.
Greatest Nigeria people!
This was the atmosphere in Lagos as hundreds of Nigerians took to the streets to protest the economic hardship in the country. A large crowd was recorded, even though Nigerian pop star Two-Face Idibia, one of the key organizers of the protest, dubbed One Voice Nigeria, released a video over the weekend calling off the protest, citing security reasons. But for Soweto Hassan, another key organizer, the protest was inevitable given the worsening economic situation in Nigeria.
For the past 2 years, this country has continued, you know, to flounder without any direction economically and politically. And Nigerians are here to express their annoyance because all of the hope invested in the current government of Buhari has led to disappointment and all of that. And people are hungry. There's much unemployment, there's much hardship, there's much hunger across, I mean, the vast majority of the population. And people are asking questions as to why Nigeria must continue to remain in this same condition of poverty in the midst of plenty.
The protesters sang revolutionary songs. The protests attracted a cross-section of Nigerians, especially youths, many of them graduates who have no jobs. Daba Omorege, a housewife, tells me why she joined the protest.
I've come here as a mother because as a mother, we are the backbone of society. We are the ones that fail our children when they don't go to school. We are the ones that fail our children when they don't have, there's no food on the table. We are the ones that feel it when our husbands don't have jobs. You know, my daughter is 19 now, but I know what I went through to put food on the table. To put food on the table. And so this government doesn't empower us, and they need to empower us more.
Many like Justin Chinedu, who joined the protest, said it was a huge success as it has sent a message to those in power.
I would say with this protest, this is the first time Nigerians are coming together to ask the government, what are the things that you are doing? What are the things that you are giving to common man? You appointed ministers, they are not working. People around your cabinet, they are not working. With this protest, I believe that everyone sitting in that government position will have a bit of consciousness in them for what they can do to at least change things a bit. We are not asking for too much.
Satisfied about the outcome of the protest, the organizers have promised that more is to come. If anything, the protest showed that President Buhari is gradually losing the goodwill of some Nigerians who overwhelmingly voted for him over former President Goodluck Jonathan.
Sam Olukoya reporting in Lagos.
And we are still getting your comments on this story on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Suleiman Akilu says, the economic crisis is the consequence of mismanagement and misuse of resources of the previous government, coupled by activities of Niger Delta militants and slumped prices of oil in the international market. Therefore, it's insane to attribute such problems to the government. Another comment from Cletus Elendu from Nigeria says, Nigeria for now is bad. People are suffering. This government is the worst thing that has happened to this country.
And we'll keep monitoring your comments, so keep them coming on our Facebook page. But for now, let's talk about the legal limbo. That's how best to describe the fate of Donald Trump's travel ban. Trump now faces a legal uphill battle to overcome a ruling by a judge who temporarily blocked his controversial ban of 7 Muslim-majority nations from entering the U.S. Meanwhile, the U.S. president has continued his barrage of attacks on the judge, even suggesting in a tweet that Americans should hold the judge responsible should any terrorist attack happen. DW's Amrita Chima has been speaking to Scott Lucas, a professor of international politics at the University of Birmingham, to find out what happens next in this legal tussle between the executive and judiciary.
Well, both sides, both the Trump administration and those who are challenging the ban, must present their cases to the Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. Now, this was the court on Sunday morning, which told the administration, no, we are not going to give you an emergency lifting of the ban on the suspension. In other words, they said you cannot reinstitute the executive order. What we're looking for tomorrow, about this time, is a court decision, an appeals court decision, which says either that the executive order can be reinstated, thus again blocking tens of thousands of travelers, or they confirm that the ban is suspended. In other words, all those with visas can continue to enter the United States.
Okay, now you said both sides have this deadline. There are also those who argue that the legal challenge to the ban was not properly formulated and legally justified. How do you see it?
No, I think the legal challenge to the ban on visas was very straightforward. There are two points that are very important here. The first is, and the appeals court has so far supported this, the Trump administration has not made its case that there is a threat to national security that justifies this level of a ban. That's point one. Point two, that there is a question as to whether under the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, whether the due process of law has not been given to these people who hold visas. In other words, whether they were arbitrarily blocked from entering the United States after months of following the proper procedures.
Now, President Trump has expressed great contempt for the judge, describing him as a so-called judge, describing his decision as ridiculous. What is this tone and tenor from the president doing to relations between the executive and the judiciary?
This is what turns a case of dispute over law into a constitutional crisis. Because what President Trump has done has said, one, we don't consider the judge to be legitimate. That is much farther than any president has gone before in questioning the courts. And two, in his latest tweets, he has said if there is a terrorist attack within the United States, the judges should be blamed. This is a challenge which I must explain is unprecedented to what we call checks and balances, that the executive cannot just simply overrun the courts as well as Congress.
Professor of International Politics at the University of Birmingham, Scott Lucas.
And as you remember, this is a travel ban that has affected many people actually from African countries. And we have comments from you. Nweze Emmanuel Oyeka says, Trump is doing all he's doing to protect his people from Islamic terrorists, so don't blame him. Just cry to your country till your own leaders know that the reason people voted for them is to secure their lives and property. Another comment here from Olak Osen Joseph says, Africa just needs to unite. That's all. Godwin D. Borski says, Donald Trump has started what he can't finish. Being elected doesn't mean the whole world is his. He should not forget that he isn't the first man to rule the USA.
Right, now to Burundi, where a group of human rights experts from the United Nations say there's growing repression of civic groups and rights activists. This statement comes as Burundi marks 26 years since the adoption of the Unity Charter. The Central African nation has been plagued by ethnic tensions between the Hutu majority and the minority Tutsis since independence in 1962. So how united is Burundi after more than 25 years of this charter? Here's what ordinary Burundians have to say.
Things are being politicized, and most especially in the based on ethnicity. We remember that the Arusha Agreement, which was signed in 2000, was also violated recently, as the President Pierre Nkurunziza vied for another term in the office. So the leaders have a lot to do and to consolidate peace and security and unity, most especially in the country.
The problem is that whenever there is an important event like elections, authorities want to divide Burundians. I think that we have to seek unity because we are not united. If unity starts from the top, we will get it also at the grassroots level.
If you go up country, in villages, there's no problem between Hutus and Tutsi. People live together. They share everything. They cross marry. So there's no problem. But the only problem resides among political actors.
A section of Burundians airing their views on their country's unity.
Elovichi Henry says about the Nigerian protests, I am already at the protest ground while typing this comment. It's not just a Lagos plant protest, but a nationwide protest by concerned Nigerians who are tired of the mismanaged economy by President Buhari.
Right, so do keep it Africa Link. You are listening to Africa Link from Bonn, Germany. And in the next 15 minutes, Cameroon's indomitable lions roar their way to the AFCON Championship Trophy.
And we trailed your comments on this incredible game that was won on Sunday evening.
So do stay with us for that story and more to come here at Africa Link. But now, today the world marks the International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation. FGM, also known as female genital cutting or female circumcision, is the ritual removal of some or all of the external female genitalia. Though it has been banned in many African countries, traditional communities in various regions still practice it. This report by Antonio Cascais is now presented by Sela Oneko.
In late December 2016, a grandmother in northern Tanzania circumcised her newly born granddaughter. 2 weeks later, the baby died in hospital. She was only 17 days old. Her story was widely reported by the Tanzanian media. The granddaughter and the mother of the baby were later arrested. This is just one of the many stories of FGM that are still happening in Africa. Though the practice has been banned in Tanzania for the last 20 years, it is still widely practiced in various traditional communities. The Maasai, for instance, circumcise their girls during initiation ceremonies when they reach puberty, that means around the ages of 11 or 13. Rose Njilo belongs to the Maasai community, but she also runs Mimutie, an organization that campaigns against FGM.
FGM is still a big challenge in the herders' communities. People are not well educated in the Maasai communities and they don't know the impact of FGM because they believe it is a cultural practice and every girl should undergo the process. In the Maasai families, girls are traditionally considered children until they are circumcised. Although we don't have many organizations that deal with FGM, we have tried our best to educate the society about FGM.
The girls often want to be circumcised so that they can be fully accepted by their culture, Njilo explains on Mimutia's Facebook page. She encourages the community to go ahead with the initiation rites, but instead of circumcising the girls, she suggests symbolically pouring milk over their thighs. The actual cutting can often be unhygienic, and even if it is not, it can lead to infections, complications while urinating, during menstruation, sex, and while giving birth. In some cases, the women even have to undergo surgery when giving birth, as a scarring can cause problems. The World Health Organization estimates that about 3 million girls worldwide are at risk of FGM each year. Across the continent in Guinea-Bissau, a ban against FGM has been in place since 2011. But some groups insist that the ban is discriminatory. Iyaya Jallo, who heads a local mosque in the capital Bissau and runs a campaign against the ban, argues his case.
Our arguments are, firstly, the law discriminates against the Muslim community in the country. Secondly, 95% of Muslims in Guinea-Bissau believe that Islam, the Quran, allows female circumcision. Thirdly, it is part of our thousand-year-old tradition in Muslim communities in Guinea-Bissau.
Around half of the women in Guinea-Bissau are believed to have undergone circumcision. Fatoumata Diao Balde, a former foreign affairs minister and chair of a committee against traditional practices that harm women and children in Guinea-Bissau, strongly disagrees with arguments like those of Jallo.
In Guinea-Bissau, it's mostly the men who want these practices to continue. They claim it's for religious reasons. They say female circumcision is recommended by the Quran. And many women accept this because they don't know any better. Many women can't read or write, and they don't know what's in the Quran. It's mainly the men who read and interpret the Quran, and if they say the Quran says this or that, many women believe it.
Balde believes that awareness and information about the practice is the best way to fight it. She says that 146 village communities in Guinea-Bissau have already agreed to refrain from practicing FGM.
And that report was written by Antonio Cascais.
A comment coming in regarding this report, Wendy Bilima says, FGM is against human rights. Culture should not cause harm. Say no to FGM, sensitized communities. Brian Ayota, user in Kenya, also shared a picture showing a young man taking part in an awareness raising campaign against FGM in Garissa, that's in Kenya, showing that this campaign is not just for girls, but also includes
men
young
should
men.
Also be involved.
Yes, definitely.
Awesome.
Health check.
Now, if you think football and vaccination have nothing in common, think again. The AFCON tournament may have ended in Gabon, but not for Team Africa United. This is a platform that uses sports to promote action on health throughout Africa. This year's campaign, called Every Shot Counts during the AFCON tournament, sought to raise awareness on the importance of universal vaccination in Africa. Dr. Richard Mihigo is the coordinator for WHO's Regional Immunization and Vaccine Development in Africa, and he's been telling me why they use football to promote vaccination.
Football unites people from all across Africa and has an incredible audience. We've just seen last night during this final how incredible people were watching television and football. So the African United Every Shot campaign actually is about leveraging the power of football to raise awareness of the importance of vaccination and to inspire people, and particularly fathers and father-to-become, to ensure that their children are vaccinated.
Millions of African children remain unprotected from life-threatening but preventable conditions. Apart from using sports such as football that you've mentioned, what else are you doing to ensure that these children get vaccinated?
Well, the data that we have here at WHO clearly shows that one in five children in Africa, unfortunately, still do not receive all the necessary and basic vaccines that they need. So we believe that raising awareness of vaccination among many audiences, football is crucial to ensuring that the children actually are vaccinated. Africa United campaign that was recently launched is actually seeking exactly the same thing. So this campaign is working in close collaboration with country immunization partners. Central activity presently concentrated in a few countries. But as more partners are joining the initiative, we hope that this campaign will get the momentum. At WHO, actually, we are also working with member states to make sure that countries are actually prioritizing immunization. I'm really happy to report that last week at the African Head of State Summit, which took place in Addis Ababa, the Head of State actually endorsed a declaration on universal access to immunization as a cornerstone for health and development in Africa. So again, this is showing how not only partners, but more importantly, member states themselves are taking seriously immunization and are striving to take concrete action to make sure that all the children are immunized.
The endorsement by the African leaders aside, and it has to be lauded, but we know that the situation on the ground sometimes can be different. There are still people who do not believe that vaccination is necessary. There are a lot of myths out there. What message do you have for such people who oppose vaccination?
You are very right. But the strong message that we would like really to put forward is that vaccines really work. And in actual fact, vaccines do save lives. We've seen countries where immunization coverage is improved, vaccine-preventable diseases are almost disappearing, children are not dying from measles anymore. The African region is almost close to eradicating polio, a disease that has crippled millions of children all over the world and in this region.
WHO's Regional Immunization and Vaccine Development Coordinator in Africa, Dr. Richard Mihigo, and we apologize for that poor telephone line. Now, the Lions are back and they brought back the trophy. Cameroon's national football team, the Indomitable Lions, arrived in Yaounde today to a hero's welcome. Cameroon beat Egypt 2-1 to clinch the Africa Cup of Nations title for the fifth time. The young Cameroonian team accomplished this feat despite many football pundits and even their countrymen writing them off. Moki Kinzeka was at the airport to welcome the team and filed this report.
Thousands of fans sing and shout as they give a hero's welcome to the indomitable lions at the Yaounde Nsimalen International Airport. Among them is 22-year-old student Mbasi Victor, who says the team has rekindled hope in its supporters.
Nous sommes fiers de nos lions.
We are proud of our lions. Hugo Bruce should preserve this group because our focus today is on 2019. We believe strongly that in 2019, the Lions will make us live memorable moments as they have done now.
Before the tournament began, Cameroon's coach Hugo Bruce said seven players had refused to come, saying that they were involved with championships on their European teams and could not find 1 month to sacrifice in Gabon. Media outlets criticized the Hugo Bruce handling of the team, reporting that he sparked conflicts in the team by using regulars as reserves during matches. Many did not believe in the team. But today, this lion's song by the Cameroon military blasts through speakers along the road from the airport to the country's Football Federation head office to thank the team for making Cameroon proud. The indomitable Lions midfielder Arno Jum says he and his peers are overwhelmed.
We are very happy with what is happening here today because this is a historic moment in the life of our country. We have lifted the flag of Cameroon so high, it's the pride of our country. At some point, our supporters were not so happy with us. We felt it and we promised to make them proud after a long period of absence. Some people doubted us, but we said we were indomitable lions. We are Cameroonians whose pride cannot be bought. Our pride is priceless.
Son honneur, son orgueil n'ont pas de prix.
The president of the Cameroon Football Association, Tombi Aroko Sidiki, says there is no time to rest. He has outlined a plan of work for the team, which he says must qualify for the World Cup.
Je remercie Dieu parce que je l'ai toujours dit.
I am thankful to God. I always reminded these youths that man can only feed from his hard work. I told them that people did not believe they were not a good team.
Besides the Continental Trophy, Cameroon striker Christian Bassogok was voted best player of the tournament. Fabrice Ondua, best goalkeeper, and team captain Benjamin Mukanjo, man of the match.
Moki Kinzeka reporting in Yaounde.
And we've received so many comments about the victorious win for Cameroon last evening. Asha Komugisha says, congratulations to Cameroon, who are the AFCON 2017 deserved champions. Teamwork, commitment, and discipline guided them. We have another comment here from Jay Walking, who says, big football game last night, ending in dramatic last-minute excitement. Congratulations to Cameroon for winning the Africa Cup of Nations.
And they did that. Remember, at the beginning of the tournament, they were dealt a blow after eight players in the European League declined to join the national team.
Yes, indeed. And later, they also had rows over bonuses, and many people thought the team would barely make it through the semifinals. Remember, Crispin, you were rooting for Ghana. I was rooting for, well, the winning team.
Well, you never know. This is football and it's a round ball and it can go either way. In this time, it favored the Cameroonians.
Yes, but I think it's true. Like the previous commenter said, they had lots of teamwork. Actually, one of the coach of the team said, after some time, the squad felt more like family as opposed to just teammates. And I think this spirit is what made them, you know, defeat Egypt.
Egypt, absolutely.
Which was a strong team.
Exactly. They have won the cup also, I think, seven times. And they were hoping to win it now the eighth time. But Cameroon were too strong for them this time.
Yeah. I think the individual goal from Vincent Aboubakar sealed the victory. And this was in the last half. And Egypt could not, you know, save themselves. We have another comment here from Dr. Tenua Constantine, who says, congratulations to Cameroon. Shame upon those Cameroonians who refused to play for their country at AFCON and remained at their club. Sangyeno says, AFCON final Congratulations to Cameroon for winning the Continental Trophy. I hope Matip and friends have learned their lesson.
Right. Onjiko, we'll have to leave it at that point. And congratulations once again to the indomitable Lions of Cameroon for winning the AFCON 2017. From us here at Africa Link, remember you can find more stories on DW Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
And I'm Onjiko Mwaura.
Goodbye and take care.